I think it's about not taking your predictions very seriously and holding yourself accountable to them, but not in a judgmental way. I mean, there's obviously a lot happening. There's a lot of convergence. There's a lot of fragmentation on the other end and consumer behavior. And at the end of the day, we're only as good as the data that we have.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof. So today, I have somebody who I'm really excited to have on the show, a principal analyst at eMarketer, Jillian Ryan, who I've known for, you know, a while now. And I think one thing that I've really appreciated about the way that she approaches her work is she just has very interesting thoughts about how to actually be an analyst, which really, if you think about it, is a bit of a futurist. It's you know, the type of skill set that you need if you're trying to better understand where things are going. That's why I really wanted to have her on, and I'm really psyched to have her. So, Jillian, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I am also psyched to be here as well.
I know. I'm trying to bring psyched back.
I think it could happen.
I said it to my daughter recently, and she was like, "Does that mean psychic?" And I'm like, you're six. Why do you know what psychic is? So, but yeah, no, I mean, I'm really excited to have you on because I really wanted to, you know, I was talking to somebody where they said, well, how does somebody even become a futurist? You know, and I know that analyst is not necessarily exactly the same thing, but what you're doing is you're absorbing data from a lot of different sources and you're basically trying to assimilate a number of different things in order to put together a better perspective for your customers, right? So I'm wondering, you know, for you, you know, like how does eMarketer even, or how does the typical company within your cohort come up with their methodology in order to figure out where things are going?
Yeah, I wouldn't call myself a futurist, but I definitely think part of our job as analysts at eMarketer or at other firms is to get a little predictive. So that's where the lines get blurry. At eMarketer, we think about it where we need to be descriptive. So whatever given topic that we're talking about, whether that's something about B2B marketing, whether that's AI, we're always trying to be descriptive. What's happening in the landscape right now? And we do that through quantitative data. So by curating different research studies that have been published by nonprofit organizations, by, you know, different trade institutions. We also use vendor-sponsored data, which, grain of salt, always. And we use all of those studies to triangulate, essentially, what is happening here. That isn't enough often. So we also do qualitative research as well, especially for me at eMarketer, just with what I cover, being B2B marketing, digital transformation. Sometimes the studies there aren't too indicative or don't paint a full picture of the space. So I always try to round it out by making sure that kind of what you're doing here, talking to experts in any given field about any given topic to really kind of gut check what my assumptions are. And then that helps with the next part, which is being prescriptive. So giving advice about, well, what does this mean? And then again, predictive, what does this mean in the future? So those are kind of the three pillars that we think about, whether that makes me a futurist or not.
No, that you
TBD.
You gave me like four follow-up questions about that.
Go
like,
for it.
Normally you're supposed to give one at a time, just FYI. But no, because I think one of the top things that you just mentioned, and I won't remember all of them, but you know, you think a lot about the sources that you guys are consuming.
Totally.
And, you know, some things I feel like you've got to take with like three tablespoons of salt, you know, because there's a bias in the data that you're consuming. So
yeah.
how do you guys acknowledge that or look for that and kind of say, okay, this is interesting research. However, let's look to see where it's coming from. And then based off of that, maybe the methodology isn't kosher or, you know, it's something that maybe we should just, you know, throw out entirely because it's suspect.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is, you know, for any of our clients that are listening, anyone who reads eMarketer, we do all that without anybody even knowing it. Any piece of research that's published on our site in our product has gone through a rigorous methodology process. So that could be like the N count is too small, or we don't know how the survey.
Tell, by the way, I know what that is. But
an N count is the number of respondents that are in any given survey.
Yeah.
So the sample size, essentially. Mm-hmm. Sorry to use my research nerdy language.
She's smart. That's all, basically, guys.
And fun.
Yeah.
So if the N count's too low, for example, if we don't know how the survey was put into the field, Or if it is from a specific vendor, we want to know what questions were asked. Were they leading questions? What kind of respondents were they? What was their seniority level? Were respondents, you know, given a gift card to compete this, like to complete the study? So all of those different factors, the research team at eMarketer is honestly the pillar of all of that. And they spend their days looking through any given study that whether they come across it or as an analyst, we come across it to vet that. And there have been times where I've found the most excellent data point that's going to really just like bolster my report. I want to use it. And the researcher has been like, Jillian, we can't use this because of X, Y, and Z, because they found the methodology wasn't sound. And obviously I'm upset about that. But at the same time, that's how we keep that, you know, very non-biased, descriptive, predictive, prescriptive way of presenting our research, because anything that we're including has gone through kind of the crap test, so to say.
Yeah. I didn't know that that was an official term, the crap test also.
That is not an eMarketer term. That's a Jillian Ryan term.
That's fair enough. Yeah, I like that because I think that, you know, you're right. There's sometimes where you look at something where it does smell a little funky. So I think that that's a good name for it. It's just to me like an interesting thing where I was actually having a conversation with somebody at SurveyMonkey today about more or less truth in data and how there are more and more people who are weaponizing data to use it for nefarious purposes, you know, where they essentially have a certain view of the future. So then they say, hey, let's go and conduct some research, or let's go parse the results of the research in order to prove our point.
Yeah, self-serving.
Right, exactly. So, and I don't know, maybe that's always been around, but is that something that you've noticed is a little bit more on trend lately?
I think it's always the case. And again, that goes to some of the vendor studies. And to even give some background, before I worked at eMarketer as an analyst, I was a content marketer. So I did content marketing for vendors, for ad tech companies, for privacy software companies. And any time that whether you're a vendor or you have skin in the game, you're always looking to tell a story that suits your business needs. So our goal on the other end of that is to not get kind of caught up and lured into some kind of false assumption. And sometimes we see that data and it is really interesting and does add a counterpoint to an argument. But again, then that's when we look to interviews. So let's talk to someone that doesn't work for a vendor, that maybe is on the agency side or the brand side, that's struggling with a problem in marketing or technology, to ask them how they're feeling. Like, does this data point gut check with you? And getting feedback that way can also double check our instincts. But normally, you know, when we encounter that stuff, we tend to not cover it. And if we do cover it, we put it in the report. Like, hey, guys, we're not too sure about this one.
And, you know, that brings up an important point. You know, I don't know how many times people have asked me, what's more important, qualitative or quantitative? And it's like, I don't know what to do. Like, what's more important, water or food? You know, like there are certain things where like it depends, and it depends on a lot. I mean, and that's my perspective. But how do you view the importance of one in relation to the other?
I think that's a great question. And it also would depend on which analyst from eMarketer you were talking to and what topic they cover. So, for example, we write a lot about demographics. And there's a ton of data. There's, you know, there's Pew studies, there's census data that tell you that story. So for that type of, you know, research, I don't really think you need as much qualitative. However, if you're talking about some of the topics I cover where it is a lot of vendor-sponsored stuff, there, you know, are a lot of gaps and holes in the entire landscape that I'm looking at, that's where the qualitative can really come in to kind of fill in some of the holes and make sense of what's happening outside of the quantitative.
Somebody put it to me this way once, and I kind of thought that this was an interesting perspective, which is just qualitative is when it can be best used when you don't know necessarily exactly what question you want to ask, where it might, you know, surface some information that you didn't even, and then it lets you develop a few questions that, you know, that you can go forward with.
Yeah. You know, when I do interviews for any given topic that I'm working on, and depending on the topic, the amount of interviews differs, but I would say I average probably like 20, 25 per report that I write. I've done some where I've interviewed, you know, up like almost 70, which is a whole other ball game. But my first interview is really kind of high level, and I'm putting it to the source and saying, this is what I'm writing about. These are my first instincts. thoughts and trying, and I'm going to trusted sources, people that I, that know me, that know my work. And then as I go through, we start to get more granular. Okay, well, this is a theme that a lot of people are talking about. Maybe I should start asking specifically about this, or, you know, is there another angle that we're not thinking about? So the questions are certainly in flux and fluid throughout the entire interview process. And I know that I'm done with an interview process if I get off the phone and I'm like, okay, I have it. That's all I need. But oftentimes it's a 30-minute conversation that I'm like, I wish I had 10 more minutes, but it's like C-level people and they're busy.
Totally.
They're busy.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you said you'd only speak to me for 7 minutes. But
are we over?
But we won't. Yeah, but we won't let you leave. So that door, you know, it's locked.
It's locked.
So yeah.
Stuck.
But yeah, so I'm wondering, like, how do you as an analyst become a futurist, you know, a better futurist on an ongoing basis? And obviously, and we're not just talking e-marketer, but how does somebody adopt the analyst mindset in order to be a better, you know, more accurate about future trends that they cover or that they're interested in?
Yeah. You know, for me, I do that through the qualitative. Again, I think it depends, depending on what kind of researcher you're talking to. But as I have conversations, I'll start to maybe hear a term that I don't know. It's something new or emerging that I'm not very familiar with it. And as you see stuff kind of bubbling up on the horizon, you'll notice that it starts moving towards you and you're hearing about it more and more. So I'm always on the lookout for, like, what can I catch in my net that's something that I didn't know about or wasn't a big deal 6 months ago, but now it's all I'm hearing about in conversations. So it's about keeping track of essentially, like, whatever your coverage area is, or if you're a marketer that's listening right now, whatever the channel that you own is, whatever your team is working on, and being aware of what's current, but also making sure that you're reading eMarketer, listening to podcasts like this to stay ahead of the game and having a full view of the landscape in a way.
Yeah, because I think that it's true. It's one of those things where if you don't have a broader view, then you're not going to find the interesting things that are bubbling up that nobody, that you, they might not be on your radar otherwise. And
totally.
I think that otherwise, I've seen people where it's like they kind of have on those, what are those horse thingies, blinders,
mm-hmm.
right? Horse thingies. You can tell.
That's the official word.
You can tell I grew up in New York City. So yeah.
Same.
And if you have blinders on, then you're not going to notice these trends or these new technologies that are popping up all around you. You're going to be really focused on the things that you previously were really interested
yeah.
in, you know? So, I mean, perfect examples for me is I started out in social media. And frankly, I just don't think the most interesting things are happening in that world right now. And if I put on blinders and only focused on that, I might not notice all of the innovations happening within, you know, autonomous vehicles or augmented reality and, mm-hmm. you know, a number of other disciplines.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And I also, you know, as someone that is a former marketer that has gone to the analyst side, I think that as an analyst, I have the luxury of time. It is literally my job to talk to people and look at research and make assumptions and then share those assumptions with other people. But when you are a marketer and you're in your day-to-day and you have a deadline and there's a campaign launching and who's emailing you and did I Slack someone about this? Where's the deliverable? You often don't have the time to even come out from kind of that, never mind blinders, but just the chaos of your day-to-day to keep yourself ahead.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. And I think that a lot of it, that's probably why people, frankly, rely on analysts, you know, and market research companies is just because they've got the ability to take that view that everybody wishes that they could.
Yeah.
But just opening up Twitter and reading 10 articles is not going to give you a good sense of what direction things are going.
Yeah. And back to your point about, like, vetting stuff, what are the sources that those articles are referencing? It is very much about making sure that when you're taking the time to read something to become a futurist, that you're, it's a trusted source.
So speaking about trusted sources, you know, I know that all of us want to be that trusted source for people who are, you know, paying attention to us, and yet we don't get everything right. It's a little scary for me to make any a prediction because I know I'm not going to be 100% right. And
yeah.
I say, like, how confident I am in any particular prediction. But how do you, like, when something doesn't work out, when you don't get something right the way that you necessarily wanted to, what steps do you take in order to do better next time?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and it's super timely. I actually volunteered to write eMarketer's Key Digital Trends Report for 2020. So I've been working with my fellow analysts and corralling them, and we're kind of taking stock. Okay, well, what did we predict would happen in, you know, this year in 2019? Were we wrong? Were we right? And I think the first thing is, you know, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know the magic answer. So being able to take stock, even if we were far off base and say we were far off base, but this is what happened instead, this is right. So I think it's about not taking your predictions, you know, very seriously and holding yourself accountable to them, but not in a judgmental way. I mean, there's obviously a lot happening. There's a lot of convergence. There's a lot of fragmentation on the other end and consumer behavior, and we could try to make leaps about what will happen, but at the end of the day, we're only as good as the data that we have.
Right. And I think the way I look at it is, if you make yourself feel bad about what you got wrong, you're not going to get better. But if you say, like, listen, based off of the information we had then, we had thought a certain thing was going to happen. However, let's say the economy slowed down, which wasn't predicted, which mm-hmm. then meant that less people invested in this particular technology. So things happen. I mean, you know, it's not a future. Being a futurist is not being a prophet. Mm-hmm. So it's that's why I think, like, people don't really get that. And I always think it's interesting when people said things along the lines of, nobody thought that the guy who won in, you know, the presidency in 2016 was going to win. And in reality, a lot of people said there's like a 16% chance mm-hmm. of that happening. What that means, people don't get 16% chance. They don't get that means if you run the simulation 100 times, a particular result will occur 16, totally. You know, of those 100 times. So not to loop you into politics here or anything, but
notice
yeah.
how I'm being quiet.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I wanted to ask you also, I think that how do you, you know, we were talking a little bit about correcting for your own biases, and I want to go back to that. Like, you might have a particular thing that you're interested in, and then it looks like it's slowing down or not enough people are adopting that technology. How does anybody out there acknowledge and correct for their own biases, you know, when they're trying to figure out what direction things are going?
Yeah, it's such a fair question, and honestly something that we all have to keep in check. So, for example, as the analyst that covers B2B, as a former B2B marketer, former B2B content marketer, I love content marketing. I also cover content marketing, and being objective and being able to say, you know, well, the market didn't shift the way that I wanted it to, it is something that is just part of the job, and you have to leave it on the wayside. Like, I don't personally have any skin in the game. eMarketer doesn't have any skin in the game. Our job is to be objective and present the facts so that our readers and our clients can make better and more informed business decisions. So if I were to put my own bias in it, that isn't benefiting anybody. So that's kind of how you...
I think you're right. And this is why I think it's so important to really rely on the expertise of others, because it's very frustrating when you read something where it's like, you know, a leading, you know, health tech company showed that 88% of people believe that health tech is important. You know, I mean,
I hate those studies.
Right.
We need them, but.
You need that, and at least hopefully they have a vetted, trusted partner working mm-hmm. with them on it, where you can, like, look at the methodology and you can look to see, is this something that we can actually trust or not? Because I mean, I love finding a data point that backs me up, you know, with something that I know to be true, but then mm-hmm. I don't want to have egg on my face later when, you know, somebody says, actually, did you look how they put that thing together? Because there's bias everywhere. And I feel like unless you acknowledge it, then you're going to be doomed to being a slave to it.
Yeah. And I would also just add, like, part of our editorial process at eMarketer it's incredibly rigorous, and we do what's called a peer review process. So anytime that I hand in a report on any given topic, that gets sent to at least one or two other analysts. It also gets sent to the researcher, the forecaster, anybody who helped with interviews, and our editors, and everyone reads your report and spends about half a day on it, gut checking it, like, Jillian, I don't understand this argument, or where's this data? Like, what's this data point? I looked at the source material. This isn't clear to me. So we're going.
Who's this person being mean to you? Because I don't like them.
I'm doing the same thing to my peers.
That's true.
That's how we're keeping it.
You're beating one another up, and I feel like, I mean, obviously, the end result winds up being better if you're tougher as opposed to just being too, like, nicey-nicey yeah. about that.
And you can't take it personally. Like, I want my peers to make my work as strong as it can be. Because when we're writing a report on any given topic, we're in it for 6 weeks, 8 weeks. And again, sometimes we get those blinders on. Like, we've been thinking so holistically about just one topic that it's hard to sometimes take another point of view. So having that, the analyst gut check to call you out sometimes is very much needed. And I know I've appreciated it, and I hope my colleagues appreciate it too.
Yeah. And if they, I mean, frankly, I just think it's one of those things where if you're going to be the right kind of futurist, to me, that's somebody who is trying to get it right as often as possible,
yeah.
and not the person who wants to be necessarily on television making a very bold proclamation where you're wrong most of the time and you never get called out on it. Jim Cramer, I'm sorry. I had something in my throat. So I was going to say, maybe shifting topics a little bit, if
okay.
that's okay.
I'll go wherever
so,
you take me.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So let me bring you to the idea of the company of tomorrow and how you can basically set yourself up to be more of an innovator.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, a lot of, you know, the industry that you and I share, you know, obsesses over new technology and how it's going to impact consumer behavior, right? But I think that you, and I'm paraphrasing something you told me offline, is focusing on people, processes, and partners in order to basically become the organization of tomorrow. So what do
yes.
you mean by that?
Yeah. So I, you know, a lot of what we cover at eMarketer, a lot of the research that we look at is about, you know, the new technology, the new consumer behavior. All super important to be a futurist, to have a better understanding of what's to come. But I often think that organizations specifically sometimes forget that if they want to, you know, follow trends in consumer behavior, if they want to create a better customer experience, if they want to adopt a new technology, that's like front stage stuff, the stuff that happens externally that everyone can see. But internally, there's some backstage work. That's what I like to call it, that needs to be done. And that's how I think about kind of the three P's to modern marketing, which would be people. So people is, you know, who's the staff on my marketing team? What does the organizational structure look like? How are we training talent? What kind of professional development programs do we have? Do we have the right leaders in place? Processes is how are we all working, one, as a marketing team together and collaborating across the different business units, but then also outside of marketing, we need to be collaborating with the product team, with the tech team. If you're a B2B company, with your sales team, how are you making sure that there's, you know, a facilitation of thoughts and workflows that make sense? And then the last piece is the partners, which is, you know, internally, a marketing team, you know, they have a staff, they have the people, they have the processes, but what else do they need? Do they have enough internally to get everything done to execute their goals? And if not, what kind of partners are they working with? Their agency, their vendors, etc.
Yeah, I love that. I think that it's interesting because you're right. People do really often think about when you're trying to innovate, it's just go ahead and do it, have a great thought. But in reality, you can have a few people who have a few great ideas. If you don't have that backstage, you know, back office work,
mm-hmm.
Working properly, that, I mean, you know, take putting together a podcast, you know, like, I mean, we have a terrific producer, Adam, you know, who's a few steps away from us. We've got four interns in the other room working away on all of our plans for world domination, which, of course, you should, you know, put in the hands of an intern. And there are a lot of things that have to happen in order to set you up for success. And
yeah.
I think it's interesting that why do you think that a lot of people just naturally focus on the bright, shiny object, the thing that's sexy and right in front of them, as opposed to, like, the necessary work on the ground that has to happen behind the scenes?
I mean, you just said it. It's bright, shiny. It's sexy. But I do think that in often cases that sometimes there is that leading research that has the study that says, what's the next big technology that I need to know about for 2030? And it says 5G or it says IoT, whatever it is. And companies get excited. They get lured in by that. And they want to, well, we need to implement this technology to do, well, to do what? I think that's the real question that marketers and companies should be asking. And once they understand whatever the goal is, and the goal could be anything, it does, I don't care what the goal is, they need to be able to say, okay, well, if we're going to do that, how do we retrofit ourselves to start making changes internally right now so we can build to that, like, North Star, quote unquote?
No, that's great. And I think you touched upon something really important when you said 2030. You know, so obviously when we record this, that's 11 years out, or at least over a decade. When we're thinking about that, like, what's a perfect time horizon when you're trying to get things right for the future? Because for me, when I ran Firebrand Group, we always tried to say, like, okay, so we're never going to try to get anything right ever more than 3 years out, because the CMO doesn't last that long these days. The person who's consuming this information, it's not that helpful if I tell you with 100% certainty something that's going to happen in the year 2054.
Yeah.
But if I can get relatively, you know, close to accurate information about something that's going to happen in a few years, then you can start running test and learns next year so that you can become, you know, ahead of the whole entire industry 2 years from now. So what's your perspective in terms of ideal horizon, you know, for companies to be looking out?
Yeah, totally fair question. I'll be honest. I said 2030 because I sat on a panel a couple of weeks ago that was marketing in 2030, and I just kind of took that with me.
Sure, yeah. And I know that you're not somebody who's like, oh yeah, everybody should be looking 10 years out all the time. But I mean, what is ideal, or is there an ideal?
I think, you know, 5 years is a good sweet spot. But I also think that, you know, you need to have incremental goals too. I don't think you just need to focus on that one North Star. It's, again, building milestones to that. So shoot 5 years, but then, okay, 4 years, 3 years, and keep going backwards from that. Backwards?
I like that. Keep going backwards. I think that that's what my wife says about my maturity level. So, I mean, this was a really great conversation. I would love to maybe have you back sometime, you know, soon, so that we can continue it if you're up for it.
Yeah, it would be my pleasure. A lot
Sounds
of fun.
Sounds good. Jillian, thank you so much. Thank you again, Jillian Ryan, for joining us. I think that there was so much, like I mentioned to her, to talk about. I'd really love to have her back another time. But let me know via tweet or via review if you agree. If you hate her, that's fine. You know, I won't hold it against you. As always, just a reminder, you can rate or review us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever finer podcasts are sold. And once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Futureproof.